Please enjoy this ringback tone while your podcast is reached.
This is Raquel and Chelsea, and you're listening to Baroque Bitches.
Welcome to Baroque Bitches.
Bitches.
Your art, history, gossip, podcast.
Okay.
I'm Raquel.
I'm Chelsea.
And we are doing like a matinee, essentially. Our first matinee, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
It's morning time.
It's like morning. There's no alcohol in sight. Or maybe not here.
Not here.
It's still too early.
I might be past that stage of my life. No judgment, though.
No judgment.
Like partaking in the morning, that's do you, man. I don't know.
Mimosa, like, breakfast.
For sure.
You're probably in your 20s.
Yeah. No, we totally
did
get that. We get it. I'm tired.
Monday.
That's the only.
Yeah, it is Monday, so.
Yeah.
But we've had a good week. We had our daughter's first birthday party over
Happy
the weekend.
Birthday.
It's not her birthday yet, but Fabian's birthday is on the 8th of May, and hers is May 2, and we got some friends coming in. Blah, blah, blah.
Cute.
But yeah, let me tell you, she hated it.
Oh, no.
She like went, we had the party at 2 o'clock. She went down for her nap and woke up and was basically just like, what the fuck are all these people doing here?
Yeah. Why are you disrupting my space right now? I'm groggy.
This.
I'm groggy right now.
I'm teething. I don't fuck with everybody here right now. But she eventually came around and was like super sweet. But it's so funny. Both my kids have like texture things. So Diego on his first birthday with the cake, you know, that they get a smash cake. He was like, touched it, like get it off my hand.
Not my thing.
She basically did the exact same thing. And my stepmom had made her this like beautiful, cute little mini heart cake with like fresh strawberries because they're her favorite.
Aww.
She wanted it. She was like, no, not for me.
Do it.
Now everybody get the fuck out of here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that is some, that's probably some Taurus energy right there.
Right?
Of like, you've just disrupted my realm.
My napping, and now you're trying to fuck with my food? Like, no.
Not into it. Let me handle this situation, in this earthly realm.
Yeah. But tonight I have a pottery class.
Oh.
Which I haven't taken a class in a long time.
So much fun. You're going to learn. We're learning.
Yeah. I had a quarter life crisis like 5 years ago and bought a kiln. And my husband was like, if you don't use it by the end of this year, we are getting rid of it. So I'm on, well, he's probably, it's like a, you know, empty threat, but.
But it's just some motivation.
Yes. I'm one step closer to becoming a kooky pottery lady who sells pots out of her garage. And that's really what
I want. We'll sell it on the website.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have you guys now. We'll see.
You are our only audience. So.
Yeah. If you want some lumpy ass pots that I make and stuff which how's it going learning the new bakery job?
Oh my gosh, it's actually really fun and cool, and I've used muscles in my body that I haven't used for years.
So I'm
a little sore.
Yeah.
It is definitely hard labor situation.
Sure.
So if you guys are bakers or pastry chefs out there, or basically like back of house people, like you get it. Of like, yep, you're gonna be sore for a little while, but I can't wait to be buff. So I think it's definitely coming up for me. But it's really fun. Everyone is chill. It's great that they're all. It's like a darling little cake shop. So it's all chicks pretty much.
Aww.
So that's my environment of like I'm. I work really well with other women.
Strong female energy.
Yeah. Like and it's like, okay, guys, we're organized. Yes. Oh, can, and we can also like talk shit. Yes.
Oh my God. I love it. Yeah. It sounds like it's
really
great.
It's really cute. It's really cute. Yeah.
That eclipse has done wonders for you.
Yeah. No, seriously. I was just like, change everything. Ah. And it's so much nicer. I'm in my happy place, like working in with my hands, working with my body, not like responding to shitty emails, not doing like corporate stuff like you have to do. Of how do I say and politely, I already fucking talked to you about this shit, bitch. Like, how do I say that in a corporate, like, so per my last email, I feel like that's like, I'll pray for you energy. Per my last email, if you wanted to go ahead and read that, not my environment. Right. At yeah. All.
I know. I do. I must say, though, there is a level of like artistry to communication.
Dude.
And I think that's what kind of like motivates me in my work.
I think that it's definitely like, you don't take things as personally as I do, though.
Don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Of like, if you want to just tell me to do something, just tell me to do something and not have it like be, how do I decipher this into what I'm actually supposed to do with this information?
Just direct communication.
Which and, I think like my environment now is more conducive of that, of go do this. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, no problem.
Sure. Yeah, but I can't do the like, okay, I got to add some more fluff to this email.
It's just like, it gets so fucking petty. But I do feel just like this massive sense of pride of figuring out how to communicate things in a way that's like effective, direct, not, and like can be like, you know, people can accept it and take the information, like be okay with it.
Totally.
And it's in a way of like politely saying like, fuck you, bitch.
We already talked about this. I have that information in the account. You should read the notes on the account.
Use your eyes. My grandma has a phrase that whenever I'm asked, like, where's this go? She says, look with your eyes, not your mouth.
Oh my God.
Like, damn, wow. Grandma.
Okay.
Fabian hates it.
my dad used to say something like that. Use your eyes. Of like, he's like, I'm like 5 years old. Get the Phillips head screwdriver. I'm like,
oh yeah. No, I don't say it to my kids. My kids are like, oh yeah, let me find it for you. No problem.
Use your eyes. I'm like, Dad, I'm 5. I don't know what a Phillips head screwdriver is, dude. I know you guys out there feel me.
Yeah.
What the fuck, Dad?
Well, speaking of daddy issues.
Ooh.
Should we get into it?
Let's get into it.
Right. Let's visualize.
Ooh, I'm ready.
Streets are especially chilling today. I haven't eaten in 2 days. There's been enough room for drink, though. I hope I make enough money today to bring some food home for the baby. There's that heavy, unsuspecting door. People pass by with no idea the debauchery that occurs behind it. Maybe they do. After all, this place is getting quite the reputation now. Hi, my dears. Are we ready for another tantalizing night entertaining these properly disgusting gents? There it is. Do you hear it? That unmistakable, enchanting roar of a large crowd. They're waiting for us. Ooh, and I think they're especially excitable tonight. Let's see. Who's here? Come have a peek. Ooh. Oh, I see the man in the first row, second to the left of the long beard. Be careful with him, okay? Last night he tried to grab me between the legs hard. So I made sure my can-can incorporated a polite stomp on his foot. He is handsy, though. Oh, and look, our dear Henri is here tonight. Oh, that dear poor man. I do think he is such a gentle soul, though. He loves us so. I almost feel bad for taking his money. Who's he living with this month? Oh, Rosa La Rouge, of course. That sweet dear. But I did hear she's been sick lately. She didn't even show yesterday to perform. I wonder if she'll go to sanatorium too. Best not worry about that now. We have a show to do. Put on your frilliest frills and scantily dress your legs. Let's make this a big money night. And may we make enough to pass on the whoring tonight. So here we go. Ladies and gents, welcome to Henri Toulouse-Lautrec. Height is just a number, after all.
Ooh, I love it. Let's get some whoring on.
Let's get some whoring on. Oh my God. So when I was like maybe 7 or 8, I did a book report on Toulouse-Lautrec.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I was like obsessed with the circus. And thought, I remember thinking, I'm going to be a lion tamer.
Like, I legit. I love that.
I thought that was like a real job. I would draw myself with like a tall top hat and the like penguin suit, the coattails with the red, you know. And I thought I could be a lion tamer.
I mean, I don't want to say you probably can't, but...
I'm like, I would be so terrified now, but I love that for me as a child, just like thinking so
this is my thing.
Intently. Yeah. Yeah. Like obviously.
This is going to be my career.
If I work really hard.
Yeah. Others are saying I want to be a doctor. I want to be a fireman. I want to be a fucking lion tamer.
Fucking lion tamer.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've loved him for a very long time. But I don't think in that book report I ever got into the like brothel aspect
where
of
he
his life.
Hung out and most of his subject matter was. wow.
So it's like I'm doing a grown-up book report to correct my misconceptions and like childlike interpretations. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I do have a lot of love for today's painter and I'm excited to get into it. You and I both watched Moulin Rouge to prepare. Were you a fan of it growing up?
Oh, definitely. I love musicals. Like, I like as weird as you can get. Let's do weirder than that.
Right?
It's such a... Right? And I... watching it back, it's definitely like, wow, this was a fucking weird movie.
Right? I was like, this is fucking bananas. Like, this is outrageous. And God bless Fabian. I love him so much. And this, like, anytime he gets mildly interested in something, he Googles it and, like, hyper interests. It's like his autism being, autism's all over it.
Yeah. I get every tiny bit of information. Dates. Yeah. I want dates and last names.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, just like comes at me with all of it. And I'm like, yes, let's go. I'm here for this. So I actually didn't realize this, that director of that movie is the same director of the Leonardo DiCaprio, Claire Danes, Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which makes total sense. Yeah. That movie's also totally bonkers.
Yeah. Like, and bringing in a lot of like modern day things into into a historical context, historical reference. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, Nicole Kidman, exceptional. Ewan McGregor,
so good. Yeah.
And who's the guy that plays Harry Ziegler? Is it
Ziegler? Oh, I don't know his name, but he's awesome. Yeah. He's so good. I feel that's my energy. Like, that's my, that's, I want to be
everything's going so well.
And jolly. And I love it. Oh my gosh.
And so, John Leguizamo in that movie plays Toulouse-Lautrec. And all those characters in those movies are inspired off of people we're going to talk about today. So, but we got to start off with some context.
Yeah, who is he? Who is our short king?
ASL, give me an age, give me a sex, location. Yes. So, our story begins in the mid to late 1800s in France. And France is still in its Napoleon era. So, lots of wars happening and trying to conquer other places. Boo. You know how we get on war stuff. We're going to keep going. But on the positive end of that, we do see a lot of dedication to like beautifying Paris and France.
Because he doesn't want to get his head chopped off.
Right? He's like very concerned about the reputation at this point. And he's like, you know, the whole garbage in the street, people looking sad thing doesn't work for me. This is Paris. Like, this is France. We need to a rebranding moment. Yeah. So we see a lot of dedication to, like, facelifting the city, like in Clueless with Brittany Murphy and Alicia Silverstone. Paris is Brittany, Napoleon's
Take
Alicia.
Take those glasses off. And voila, now you're prom queen.
Right? Let's cut your shirt, give you a little midriff.
Yes, you're perfect.
So we see the introduction of like sewer systems, railroads, trash collecting probably.
Nice.
And expanding the word I can never say, arrondissement.
I don't know.
The sections of Paris. There's adding statues and monuments. And this is the reason everybody like romanticizes Paris, really, right? Because of all the old, beautiful shit.
I feel like every little corner is decorated with something.
Oh my God. It's awesome. Yeah. It's like
so
beautiful.
Cool.
Right? And so who's mom? So mom is Adele Zoe Tapier de Céléron. Mm. And I'm going to mispronounce a lot of French things this episode. So I'm sorry, my French listeners. We love you.
We love you. We try.
We sorry. So this bitch comes from like a wealthy, old money, aristocratic family that has a long history dating all the way back to the Crusades.
Damn.
And we have a love-hate relationship with mom because though it's thought that she was like really supportive of Henri and doted on him in childhood, that support kind of runs out when things don't go her way. A little foreshadowing. So who is dad? Dad is Count Alphonse de Toulouse-Lautrec Montfort. And so dad, we're not totally in love with dad. We'll get into the childhood trauma in just a minute. Oh. He's thought to have been like a very eccentric person, but not in a good way. In the like, you're making me and everybody in this room uncomfortable sort of way. Like, he usually is like, just never come around.
Oh. And he's a count?
Yeah.
That sounds evil. I don't know why. That sounds villainous.
I think it has to do with a lot with Sesame Street. Remember
count,
the count?
Yeah,
count the numbers. One, ha, 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 two, ha, 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 ha. But he was kind of evil. He was the guy that was like obsessed with hunting and would even like dress up in chainmail.
Oh,
and take
okay, wow.
He like gives me the vibe of like the guy that comes in from hunting and throws his kill on the middle of a fancy ass table with like,
prepare this.
And that's not like an actual true story. That's more to set the vibe. But there is a story of him like dressing up in chainmail and just showing up to this parade uninvited and then challenging the host to like a gunfight.
No. Oh. Wow.
They both miss and the party continues. But yeah, that'd be like a very intense energy to bring to a party.
Well, I mean, essentially you have armor on, so it's a little unfair.
What the fuck? Is this just your look or... Well, so dad also comes from a wealthy, old money, old aristocratic family that has a long history dating all the way back to the Crusades.
Okay.
And that's because Adele did not look very far when she hitched her wagon to his or this old horse.
Income.
So, you know where this is going.
How close are they?
Count was Adele's first cousin.
Yay.
Yeah. So interbreeding will become a theme in today's episode. Yeah. And the root of many, many problems for Henri. So Count Henri Marie Ramon de Toulouse-Lautrec Montfort was born November 24th, 1864. So he's a fiery Sagittarius.
Oh, yay. Finally a Sagittarius.
Yeah. Chelsea's a Sag, too. And my son Diego's a Sag. Yes. So I made sure this one was favorable. Okay. What makes Sagittarius so unique is its dynamic blend of passion, curiosity, intensity, and adaptability. Represented by the archer, half man, and half centaur, Sagittarius isn't afraid to use its bow and arrow to explore expansive terrain, seeking answers in places and spaces others would never dare venture. Mm-hmm. So this does ring very true for you and for Henri and my son.
Yeah, I'm exactly a Sagittarius. And yeah, it's just about like just fucking have fun and party, but be careful about partying too hard.
There's a lot of intense passion and curiosity happening, I feel like.
Yeah.
But yeah, you gotta check yourself if you're
a Sag. Yeah. You can dive far into vices.
Never a dull moment though, I will say that. So our little Henri is born and he's born into this like bougie ass lifestyle. I mean, mom and dad are count and countess. So there's multiple properties owned. They have animals. He loved riding horses, which dad, of course, loves. And actually, dad and grandpa are both skilled draftsmen. Because, you know, it's like the time of like rich people doing a little bit of everything. Like, you got to be good at reading. You got to be well read. You got to be an artist. Yeah. You got to be a piano player. You got to be a hunter. You got to be this. Like, right, yeah. Right. It's a sign of good breeding, ironically. You know, Henri does grow up filling sketchbooks with like loose drawings, mostly of horses, like obsessed with horses. And things are going pretty okay, right? Well, then mom has a second child who dies in infancy, Richard Constantine. And he dies just shy of his first birthday. And it's so intensely difficult for his parents that they actually separate.
Okay.
The dad leaves. So him and his mom move to Paris. And what's fucked about this, though, is, like, they're in the same family. Like, so his parents, his mom's mom is his dad's mom's sister.
Yes, aunts, I right? guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like his grandmas are also his aunts. Yeah. Very confusing. And that's, you know, so it's like his dad is nearby, always just like at a different house. So it'd be like, oh, we're going to come to our summer estate. And he's like, okay, I'll be sure I'm not here to ever see you or my son. Because fuck you guys. Like, so I'm sure there's a lot of like abandonment issues happening. Daddy wasn't there.
Yeah.
And so to make matters even worse, Henri is a teenager riding horses, probably trying to get in the favor of his shitty father when he gets into an accident and breaks one of his legs. So then a year later, he breaks the other leg falling in like a, just an everyday Hobbs accident.
Okay.
And this sounds very much like the movie Unbreakable. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Do you remember with Bruce Willis and how he's like unbreakable and then Samuel L. Jackson is very breakable?
Yeah, like, and just always falling.
Always falling and shattering.
Yeah.
Well, Henri is very breakable. Oh. And we now know this is a negative side effect of inbreeding.
Yeah.
So if you're planning on marrying your cousin and having babies with them, here's why we're judging you a little bit. So Henri had a congenital health condition called pycnodysostosis, and it's a rare genetic disorder characterized by distinctive facial features and skeletal malformations.
Oh.
So there's a lot of like bone density issues that happen. So when he breaks both of his legs, they never fully heal and they stop growing in a typical way.
Okay.
So but his torso and his upper body all develop normally. So he has the torso of a grown person and the legs of a child.
Oh, wow.
Which, yeah. So it causes him to have to use a cane and have assistance with walking for the rest of his life. And it's thought that it would have been, like, incredibly painful. Aww. Yeah. So next time you're thinking about starting a family within your family, maybe just don't.
Yeah.
Okay?
Don't.
Like, there's Tinder and Bumble and, like, all sorts of ways to meet people.
Well, then now people are finding out later on, like on 23andMe, of like, wait a second, it seems to be,
oh my god,
a connection. How interesting. Oh no. Or like,
oh no. Oh no.
I've heard those, not to get into a whole 23andMe thing, but I've heard like, if you are a sperm donor and you donate like a shit ton of sperm, like you got really good sperm,
right,
and you donate a shit ton of sperm, and then that child later on will go on 23andMe and find out, oh shit, I have like 50 brothers and sisters.
Oh my god.
And
right?
You gotta be careful, like, because they might be in your town and you might find one attractive.
Okay, so new lessons. Get the 23andMe done
first before you commit. Like,
we
gotta do background checks and 23andMe.
Oh my god, this is what it's come totally. To, but it's true. Yeah. I've had quite a few instances of like second families discovering and things I've heard of in my real life, not like on news.
Yeah.
So, of, yes.
Oh, we're related. Thank God we didn't start something.
It's important to use
yeah.
those. but anyway. So yes, Henry. So. Obviously, this is a big bummer. He's not able to ride horses anymore, which he loves. But the best thing to come out of this is that he deepens his passion and love for art. So Henry dives headfirst into making works and is very notably talented from the get-go. He's basically failing his school exams, but really growing talent as an artist. And his dad actually does appoint a family friend to teach him painting. Mm-hmm. So Rene Princeteau comes, and this guy also loved painting horses and horsey things. Mm. So it's not going to be a huge surprise when you look up this painting, Count Alphonse de Toulouse-Lautrec driving a four-horse hitch.
Okay, yes.
So you can see right off the bat, he's very skilled. He was 16.
Damn, that's cool.
When he painted this,
yeah,
right?
That's cool.
There's a very strong sense of effective composition, the use of color, shadow, light. But the biggest thing that stands out to me is the sense of movement.
Yeah, there's action,
right?
Yeah,
there's action. You can feel that charged energy of four horses running forward. And he's just so good at conveying motion and movement, and that will be a theme throughout the rest of his life's work.
Mm.
But you will notice that it's not innately realistic.
Yeah, it's very like impressionist kind of vibes.
Yeah, it's gestural, yeah, painterly, quick.
Yeah, yeah, he made it in a day kind of thing. Right. Yeah.
Right. Maybe it would take me longer.
Depends how big it is, I guess.
Yeah, we gotta let it dry or bullshit. But anyways, and at this point in time, this would have been 1881. So he's 16 and he starts wanting to get more expressive with his work. Yeah. And Princeteau is like, yeah, I can't really fly with that, but I'm going to support you and tell your parents to let you move to Paris to study under my friend Bonnat. So mom, under Princeteau's recommendation, lets Henri drop out of high school to pursue art and gets him into the best school she can. So from what I've researched on this, the way that it reads to me is mom is supportive, but in the way of like, I'll send you to school, but with the hopes of you becoming like a famous artist in honor of the family.
Yeah. You have like, to be extremely successful though with this. With this thing that's great. It's very hard to be successful at.
Yeah. And this will be like your contribution to our family honor, you know? Like a lot of pressure to put on a young
kid. Like you can be an artist, but you gotta be rich after. I'm like, shit, okay.
You have to be rich and you have to be like a like socially acceptable mm-hmm. artist.
Yeah.
Right? And so in the Monet episode, Chelsea, you talk about the Paris Salon. Yeah. But I'm going to do like a little brief overview in case you missed it. Baroque BBs. So I'll try to keep it interesting. So starting in the 17th century, there's like a royal sanction to create an institution for art patronage. Basically, the government gets with this academy, the Académie Royale des Peintres et des Sculpteurs, and they fund a semi-public art show at the Salon Carré. I don't know. I trilled the R. It probably is not trilled. I'm sorry. It's in the Louvre. You get it. But basically, anyone who's anyone is in this annual event. And getting into it was a big fucking deal. But the thing is, the Academy valued classical realism and, like, academic art. Mm. So works were really, judged on accuracy to get into this show. Like, does it look real? And so this influences the taste of everybody in Paris at the time. Because it's, like, sheeple, you know, it's all they're seeing.
Yeah.
But obviously, realism gets boring and old when it's just the same fucking dudes, like, being painted over and over
again.
Totally.
We've been doing this for centuries.
Right? Yeah. Like, we don't need 8 million things of the same painting, of the same topics.
Of hot-ass Jesus on the cross.
Right? It gets boring. Yeah. We need some new ideas. Mm. So, and this is where the Impressionists enter the conversation, enter the chat. So, Impressionism is typically marked by loose, tiny brushstrokes. Shit starts getting hella philosophical. Like, let's paint the impression, the light naturally leaves on things. Let's make it. Realism takes a backseat to color and painterly brushstrokes and movement and excitement. And people start painting outside, mm-hmm. plein air. And Monet is Monet-ing the lily ponds. And Manet is painting those naked ladies.
Yeah, naked chicks.
With fully clothed dude in the park.
And naked chicks with clothed dudes in the park. And drunk the guys. Salon de,
right? And the Salon de Paris, well, they're just not having it. And they're submitting the works to the salon and getting rejected. Like, massively rejected. Yeah. And they're pissed. They go to Napoleon III and they're like, dude, what the fuck? I don't
care. We're
going
to chop your fucking head off if you don't get us into this art show up in this bitch.
Right?
That's Parisian energy right there. You don't let me into this art show, I'm going to chop your head off.
I'm going to set you on fire.
I love it.
I love it too. And Napoleon III's kind of like, I don't care, but let's see what the public think, because I do care about what the public thinks. And I don't want to have my head chopped off. So
whatever you want, artists. Oh my God.
He's like, all right, you know, the people have voted. Let's have this other salon, the Salon de Refus, which means rejects. So nice name there. but it does give them a platform in 1863, which is the same year that Henri is born. Mm. And I know, but it's important to note, because there is a platform of rejects already well established by the time Henri gets to Paris. And the Impressionists lived and created this artsy part of town. They're the OG avant-garde, rejected by society, the original. Sorry, you don't get it. You
know,
Mom, this is who I really am.
Yeah, it's not a phase.
Yeah. And they slowly become the somewhat like this famous alt crowd, the most different. And our boy is a short king, you know. And though we love a short king back then in society, and even today and
totally.
Now, society's not really accepting of disabled people.
Yeah.
And he's different, and he knows it, and he knows when he gets to Paris, these people are my people. Mm-hmm. I'm going to fit in here. So when he goes to art school, he is very quickly drawn to what the Impressionists really pre-cultivated for him in the Montmartre district in Paris.
That's like the cool spot.
The cool spot.
Even for now, like, I mean, alt kids. Yeah.
Yeah. The artsy. Mm-hmm.
Boho.
You know, the arts district. Yeah. Right. And it's here that all of his subject matter is located that inspire his work. So now we're in, it's like nightlife, cafes, bars, shows, it's all there. So now we're entering into a time of prosperity post-war, and people's minds were shifting. They wanted everything to be joyous and fun and beautiful and indulgent. So
Bacchus,
yeah. So this time period gets called La Belle Époque, or the beautiful period, because people were really looking to enjoy life's pleasures. Yeah. So he goes and mixes with bohemians. He sees prostitutes and musicians. He starts dressing up as a clown or in Japanese clothing to be that like different guy.
I don't get it.
He's going to rager parties. There's sexual liberation, hedonism, anarchy.
Dude, I want to go.
Right? Sounds so fun. Yeah.
I'll bring some penicillin with me, though.
Good, because you'd probably
I'd need it.
And these are what I feel like these would have been like what our college years were like for us. Like they would have been like his college years. But speaking of college, I do have that bronze penis story, I promise, to the patrons.
Oh, hello there, you beautiful creature. Looks like you can't get enough of the Baroque Bitches Art History Gossip Podcast. Do you want more juicy tea? Join our Patreon for exclusive access to bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes content, exclusive voting power, digital downloads, fun merch, and more. Become one of us. One of us. By going to patreon.com/BaroqueBPodcast or clicking the link on our website, BaroqueBPodcast.com or clicking the link on our Instagram at Baroque.B.Podcast. Thank you for your support. We couldn't do any of this stuff without you. We love you. So definitely check out our Patreon to get some crazy art school tea. So if you're interested in some crazy bullshit of me and Raquel in art school together.
Antics.
In the 2010s, like around the 2010s of just us being pieces of shit. Then
the early 21st century.
Then check out our Patreon. We've got links in our on our Instagram,
baroque.b.podcast. And we're giving away free stuff. Put your shipping information in for the first 100 people that join. And
You guys are getting all like this dope free shit.
Yeah, we're going to send it out. So he was studying under Bonnat, who was an academic painter. And Bonnat just could not teach Henri anymore. I mean, they were too different. This guy's like a traditionalist. So he ditches the tutor from mom and dad, furthering that divide between him and his parents, and studies under Fernand Cormon. And now Cormon was still an academic painter, but he encourages his students to get lost in Paris. He's like, go fuck with everything. Like, get inspired, go see it all. And he's in support of their minds being blown away by the madness of the city at the time. But he most importantly, introduces him to other artists. So he's partying with new friends, Vinnie Van Gogh and Edward Degas. And he's like obsessed with Degas. Degas would have been older than him. And he's just like eating his shit up. Like he loves the way he paints. He's very, very influenced by him. And he's also meeting the ladies.
Paid ladies.
Yes, paid ladies of the night. But he's found his scene, and like this is his crew. So art wise we're entering into post-impressionism now. So post-impressionism is obviously hugely influenced by Impressionism. That's why we talk about
it.
But they push the limits even further with expression, I think. Mm-hmm. They really make the picture like more what we would say like artsy, I guess. They're getting more imaginative, pushing color even further, and reality is being even pushed further out the door. Yeah. So the best like kind of example I can give you is like think about Monet's lily pads. Everybody knows what those are, right? What they look like. And now think about Van Gogh's Starry Night. Like that's kind of the difference, right? The scene from nature and more natural colors, and then this other scene that's also outside and from nature, but the colors are so exaggerated. You know, it's further removed from that natural depiction.
Even more of like an impression of reality and not as concerned. Because even the Impressionists, the early Impressionists, were still concerned with like the illusion of depth. And then of like, we still wanted to make it look like the subject. But then we're starting to veer into really like what modern art is today, which is still like post-impressionism is a recognizable subject matter. But it's illusion of depth. Who cares about that? Let's treat the canvas as it is. It's a flat object. Right. So might as well make it flat and make it pattern and color and other things rather than, and other things are coming in too, like from trade. So we've got heavy influence of Asian art and African art coming in as well.
Which I'll talk about in a minute.
Foreshadowing.
So look up this painting at the Moulin Rouge.
Ooh. Oh, I like this one.
So this is a really famous painting. It's a really great demonstration of like post-impressionist work. It's inspired by the darkest depths of society. And the painting itself is very gestural. The figures are almost outlined and filled in with washes of color that would have been made from thinned out paint. And the biggest star of the show, again, is movement. So we see this brilliant can-can dancer front and center. There's a million top hats. The highs and lows of society intermingling. That's energy. And it's thought that he was like maybe kind of obsessed with movement because it was his biggest personal challenge due to his disability. So that it like plagued him.
He can't dance.
And so it's thought that he was like obsessed with movement because it was one of his shortcomings. But you can see there's like this thorough knowledge of the human form. So it's key that it's like almost like he's trained in the classics and in the you know, the academic way of making art, which allows him to break from it in a really effective way.
Master the rules before you break them.
It's like it's exaggerated, but it's not impossible.
He still has proportion, like correct proportions for the most part. He just kind of makes them a little wobblier.
They're wobbling, but nobody feels like they're floating or that they don't make sense in space. It's interesting how effective it is. So the Moulin Rouge is obviously hella famous after that movie. And the thing is that that movie's not like a documentary or anything, but I do think it kind of captures that madness of the time.
Everything is entertainment and we're just here to like for debauchery.
But there's like a darkness behind all that performative.
Everyone's
kind of
sick and
everyone's
poor
And there's like this dynamic, and you know, but we do see the intermingling of society. And when the Moulin Rouge opens, Henri becomes a regular, not only because he's like, you know, fucking the ladies. But also because he was really inspired by them and identified with these other people in society. So let's talk about these performers who would have all been regularly featured in the work. So Suzanne Volodon, she was the daughter of an unwed marriage. And she grew up very poor as the daughter of a laundress. She never knew her dad. And she grew up doing odd jobs like funeral wreath making and selling vegetables. Well, when she's 15, she gets a job in the circus and quickly becomes the eye of many artists like Renoir, Marisol, Degas, and our boy Henri. And she was like rebellious and resourceful and attractive and talented. And but she was also a really talented painter and totally deserves a podcast. But it's not thoroughly documented, but it's thought that she was his only true love, possibly. And that after their affair ends, that she actually attempts to unalive herself.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So very intense romance. Wow. But then, you know, she does go on to do other things, which we'll have to get into a podcast.
Yeah. She's got some tea.
Yeah. So then there's Chocolat, and the stage name for Rafael Padilla. Originally born into slavery in Cuba, his parents left him to be raised by a woman to escape slavery, who then sells him. The woman sells him.
Oh, my God.
I know. So rough.
Yeah. Talk about abandonment issues. Shit.
Oh, my God. And he deserves a pod, too.
Yeah.
But so through a long series of events, he basically becomes a famous clown at the Moulin Rouge. Ooh. And he was one of the first successful black entertainers of the time period and had apparently a hysterical act of shifting between a happy and sad clown.
Oh, I want to see it.
I know. So, you know, like Satine in Moulin Rouge, how she's like carried by Chocolat.
Yeah.
That's Chocolat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was a real person based in truth.
Wow.
Yvette Goulbert. She is basically the originator of that style of show performative singing, where you go from singing to speaking.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And she was apparently like super raunchy and wore long yellow arm, like shoulder length gloves that would animate her performance while she did these depraved stories.
I love it.
I know. So listen, this is one of lyrics from her songs, like loosely translated. So without saying anything, the best man comes into view to take off my sister's garter. But having made a mistake, here is the friend who unfastens mine by groping. Naturally, I let him do it. While drinking Moët et Chandon, I very rarely do crazy things. But when I do, name, I'm beyond all fantasies. I'm not a girl anymore. I'm a boy. For me, the pleasure, the laughter, I'm making my corset crack. Because there's no point I have to stunt when I drank Moët and Chandon.
I feel her. Like, yeah, that's how I get, right? Too.
She's just talking about being loosey-goosey from drinking
too much champagne. For sure.
Yeah, and people fucking love that.
I feel her.
And the last performer we'll talk about is Jane Avril. Or, well, second to last. Jane Avril is the character Satine is inspired off of. She was the daughter of an Italian aristocrat and a prostitute. So I'm getting the whole daddy wasn't there vibe happens probably. For a lot of the people that are performers.
Yeah, probably.
When she was a teenager, she was runs away and she's admitted into an asylum. But she was, you remember St. Vitus's dance from the Andy Warhol episode?
Oh, yeah.
She had St. Vitus's dance. Oh. And this causes jerky movements in your limbs where you can't control your muscles. Yeah. So she had just a very interesting way of moving. Mm. Well, it was rumored that when she was in asylum, one day the hospital hosted a dance. And she dances and is cured and is allowed to leave.
Oh, okay.
But she was, like, also fucking her doctor who wouldn't marry her. So then
probably
she tries to unalive herself. But then when she's still alive, she gets to leave. And a nice madame of a brothel takes her in.
I'll go ahead and take this girl.
Yeah. She's like, I'll take care of it. I'll take her off your hands. Mm-hmm. And she shows up in all sorts of Henri's paintings. And both as a full-blown showgirl and then as an average Jane, like, out in the streets you would never know. Mm-hmm. So he has this beautiful way of, like, depicting what's actually happening, almost like history painting at the Moulin Rouge. But then he also, you know, stamps these people in time with these average portraiture of them. Yeah. So it's, you know, so it's nice because he humanizes them and takes them out of a context of being a commodity for somebody else.
Yeah.
And makes them like a real person in an honorable portrait.
Yeah, I think a lot of times like movies, even like literature, will glorify this like being a poor artist. Isn't it lovely? Isn't it wonderful? And you're like, it's not though, really, because you have to work your ass off by doing other things, and and you usually don't have enough money for stuff. So all those things that you take advantage of, yeah, you're not gonna get that if you want to be a poor artist living in squalor, you know.
Right? Yeah. Like, not at all.
So it's cool that he does that.
Right. And it's like, you know, in Degas' painting, all those ballerinas like were dancers, but they didn't make enough money to just be dancers. Yeah. So they were prostitutes, you know? Like, and that's very much the same thing here. These women can't make enough money just dancing and performing. Yeah, they also have to sell themselves. Yeah. Which is so fucked. So it's like, oh, you got to work all day doing these fucking dances and learning these routines. And now you got to go fuck this smelly dude in the corner. Mm-hmm. Like, ugh.
Yeah. To pay for your shitty apartment.
Yeah. Fuck, where you live with 10 people and you're not eating any food.
Yeah.
So these were all integral figures in Henri's life. Like his friends, people he would really spend a lot of time with. So he's painting the girls, he's watching the shows, he's the resident artist. So it's no surprise that he shouldn't be invited to create their first advertisement. Mm. And it's also important to note that he was displaying his works at the Moulin Rouge and at other similar establishments in Paris at the time. Cool. So definitely not the prestigious Salon de Paris that his mom was probably hoping for, right?
It's like at brothels and bars.
Yeah, exactly. So look up this painting, La Galoue.
Oh, yeah. I remember this one.
Yeah, so this one is also hella famous. So this was a promotional poster that we've all seen. And La Galoue was both the name of a performer and the name of this print. And La Galoue means the glutton or greedy guts. Mm. She was famous for stealing crowd members' drinks and chugging them while she performed.
Oh, my God. My hero. I love that.
I knew you would like that. She was also called No Bones, quote unquote, because she could bring her leg ever so high up above and bring her foot over her head. And she would kick off the hats of patrons.
Fuck yeah, I love that. I want to see her.
I know. Can actually look up, there is a photo of her with her leg held high up next to her head. So this poster features La Galoue advertising for people to come to the Moulin Rouge. And everyone probably knows this print. It features a haughty can-can dancer amongst a sea of greedy top hat wearing dudes. And the style is almost like caricature-esque.
Yeah.
Drawings with a flat line filled in with flat color. It's super wobbly and cool and totally a poster on the walls of many an indie chick's
homes. Oh, totally. I think I have this like postcard at least. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So Henri is considered to both have influenced and be influenced by the avant-garde movement. He's really accredited with elevating art in a commercial purpose as well. So we see other artists do this too, like Alphonse Mucha and Théophile Steinlin. You know, the black cat poster?
Yeah, Steinlin cats.
Yeah, the Steinlin cat. So Lautrec sort of gets credited with possibly like being the father of commercial print because of how influential his poster work was. So we can thank him for that. But we also can really thank the Edo period in Japan for
that. Totally. Yeah.
So, you know, Lautrec, much like Manet and Van Gogh, was very influenced by Japanese prints that came into the European market in the later 19th century. And these black prints had eroticism in them too, elongated flat forms, and they were very, very chic to own at the time, like the rager. And these, they definitely deserve a pod. We have to do a Hokusai episode.
Obviously,
soon.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And you all know Hokusai, the Japanese wave paintings. Yeah. But these were massively influencing the Impressionists and Post-Impressionists, too. And the result is just such a beautiful outcome that really captures the aesthetic of the time in Paris. Yeah. People fucking loved this advertisement. There were 3,000 prints made, and people were, like, stealing them off walls before they had a chance to dry. Right?
I would take it. Here, cover me so I can take this thing.
That actually reminds me of when one of the students in the art program did a bunch of prints of their lino cut and posted them all over the school, and then people took them home. I took one home, sorry Francisco, and he was so mad that people took them. I remember him being
people
like,
are gonna take them.
Yeah, of course they are. I was just thought, like, these are really cool.
I still have a couple of like random posters that'll be hanging up, like band posters in bathrooms. Like, if it's cool, I'm taking it. I'm sorry. Yeah. I want it.
It's a compliment. Yeah, it's a compliment. But so he does get basically some overnight fame from this, and gets commissions. He starts becoming like the guy to go to for your print, for advertising your space, cool. Especially in these like after dark establishments.
Yeah, because they're kind of funny.
They're kind of funny. They're really cool. I mean, if you look up his other prints, you'll know them too. Yeah. And they're really influential to modern day, like, commercial artists. So he does other things though too. He's throwing bohemian dinner parties for his friends, making exotic cuisine. He writes a cookbook.
I want it.
And he invents a drink called the Earthquake.
Oh.
Which was a mixture of cognac and absinthe.
Yeah.
And he's like a solid, right?
Even though absinthe is so gross, you guys.
Really? I like you it. Like I feel it? Like it tastes like chartreuse, kind of. You got
to
put
put stuff in it, but it's that wormwood is not my favorite. That's not my favorite taste. Oh my gosh.
But he's a solid, everyday regular at the Moulin Rouge. But, you know, unfortunately, like we were foreshadowing, Sagittariuses sometimes can have some overindulgence, maybe.
Yeah.
And, you know, so he's having an awesome time. The other thing that's very much a regular on this podcast happens to
no,
can you guess what it is?
Not syphilis.
Syphilis! Our favorite resident STD.
Oh, no.
So Henri loves the courtesans so much that he would move into a brothel sometimes for like weeks at a time with these women.
Wow.
And I get it. It was the time to be fucking, right? But it's thought that one of his lovers, Rosa LaRouge, gave her boy syphilis.
Mm.
So syphilis, in case you missed it, is a sexually transmitted disease.
Everyone's going to be an expert on syphilis after listening to us for enough time.
Well, it causes just a host of ailments, rashes, oozing, pus, blotchy skin, organ failure, eye goo, hallucinations, mental illness. It's all there. So if you are sexually active, this is your warning. Please go get tested. It's very treatable. Syphilis.
Yeah, we can treat it now. We got penicillin now,
even
you guys.
Even in the late, like, hallucination stages, you can
It's all good. No worries.
And so on top of syphilis, Henri's partying turned into major alcoholism.
Mm.
And he would pride himself in his ability to drink, so much so that it's rumored that he hollows out his walking cane to fill it with booze.
Okay, that's a good idea.
So that he has like a very long flask.
Yeah. I think I've seen one of those too. I think my grandpa or somebody had one of those.
Damn.
Yeah.
Really?
It was hollow. Yeah. Oh my God.
So you put your booze in
there. You gotta do something.
Yeah. On the go, on the fly. But how do you drink out of that discreetly?
It's pretty, I think it's very discreet.
Well, so at this point, mom is pretty much cut off all communication. And this happens like when he starts partying too hard and she realizes he's not going to be that proper artist she was hoping for to get her into the it crowd.
Sorry, mom.
So there's a lot of fucking asshole things that happened to Henri from people that should have probably cared about him. His uncle apparently burned his paintings. Like, lit them on fire.
Oh, my God. Because
he was, because of who he was, you know.
Oh, whatever.
His father disinherits him.
Oh, shit.
So, basically, like on paper, disowns him.
Shit.
And his, our friends were totally shitty to him, too. So, you guys, I get it. Like, alcoholism is really difficult to, like, be around. And I know that. But listen to some of these bitchy quotes. So, I couldn't. So, Francois Gazy said, Henri Toulouse-Lautrec is a drunken, vice-ridden court jester. Like, dick? And then Edward Degas says, his paintings are brothel studies that stink of syphilis.
Whatever, Degas.
Yeah. Like, okay, whatever. Listen, we know who those ballerinas are.
Are you serious? What are you to judge?
Really? Like, get out of here. Seriously. And sex work is work, okay? Well, so the syphilis and the drinking caused some very bizarre erratic behavior. And when mom cuts him off, he does not handle it well. He collapses and is institutionalized in a sanatorium. And it's thought that he would have undergone like horrible treatments, like electric shock, drugging, ice baths, not fun. But he's like committed to getting the fuck out of there. And so he does paint to sort of prove that he's lucid.
Okay.
And draws these elaborate circus depictions and paintings that I was very inspired by it as a child. Oh. So if you look up at the Circus Fernando, the ride, and you'll see again, the main theme is movement. The horse, the redheaded queen riding it, the gents.
Oh, yeah, I remember this one.
It's all there.
Yeah.
Totally individualized from other great artists at the time, too.
Yeah.
Like, he's one of his own. He really is. And he does this, these paintings effectively get him out of sanatorium.
All right.
So he gets released, but he's a fucking alcoholic. So he's like, goes right back to party.
Yeah.
Right.
He's back. Like, oh, thank God I'm out of there. Now I can do my, like, now oh, I can do my God, thing.
I'm going to go get wasted again. So, but then he gets so wasted that he has a stroke, shit, which leaves him paralyzed. And in a very last effort to get well again, he goes to his family home and he's like, maybe my mom will help me. Mm. Well, his dad apparently answers the door and is a total dick and does not agree to help his suffering, dying son.
Jesus.
So on September 9th, 1901, he utters his last words. I knew, Papa, that you wouldn't miss the kill, the old fool. And Henri dies at 36 years old.
Oh, my gosh. Just from, like, yeah, just from having that stroke.
Yeah, I think it's like a combination of alcoholism, yeah, and paralysis. Like, he is like drinking himself to death.
Oh, man.
So, oh, yeah. Poor guy. I mean, you know, I have like a soft spot for him because I really do think that he loved the ladies.
Yeah.
Like in a point of admiration, not really like abuse vibes in any way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, more in the like feeling integrated into society, like, this is who I am, this is what we do,
yeah,
this is
our family. These are my people. Yeah. 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 And not just, yeah, like as an outsider looking in, that I think, no, a lot of people do a lot of times when they're not connected to their subject matter. Of, right, like, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to paint it because it's interesting. You're like, no, you should have a little insight and, like, experience, right, it. Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, Like, it, exactly. That's such a good way of putting that. And his legacy, like, definitely is, like, lives on today.
Oh, yeah.
It's not that he's, like, very much influenced the Fauvists.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, Matisse.
Right. Yeah.
Michelle.
Because his colors sort of, you know, start that fauvism. Mm-hmm. And his paintings sell for multi-million dollars, the most expensive one, $22 million. Mm. He, you know, father of commercial print.
Yeah.
But he, my favorite thing is that he gives a voice to those who were not thought of as worthy to have one. Mm. And humanizes the people that were thought of as commodities. So, yeah. And he gives representation to the disabled community.
Totally. Yeah, so, totally.
Right? I love him. But so, who's the person at the party?
Oh my God, he is the party. Oh my gosh.
I know, he is the party. But so I put Johnny Depp.
Okay, yeah. I mean,
Depp is a Hollywood freak with a capital F.
Yeah.
And I mean that in like the best way possible.
Yeah.
He does seem like he's always gunning to do the alternative type of movie.
Totally. All the Tim Burton movies. Yeah.
Right? And he's incredibly talented, but he clearly has like a lot of demons. Mm-hmm. Cutting his own finger off, raging with alcohol, drug induced. Well, I don't know. But also maybe Amber cut it off?
Yeah, because I was heavily into
following the
Amber Johnny Depp court stuff bullshit. I don't think she meant to do that, to be totally honest. I don't think she meant to fucking cut his finger, but I think she did throw something at him that either he like either she threw a bottle at him or something, or he picked up something that severed his finger, and I'm sure he was probably heavily influenced,
like blitz,
yeah, right? And maybe didn't just notice gone. That there was, or didn't feel it right away or something like that. I think that's kind of what
it's like, maybe shudder.
I know. I think that's what people were kind of pointing at, like, I don't think she really, even though she sounds very intense and troubled, but I don't think she meant to, like, actually physically hurt him in that way, that hard.
I think that they're both, like, very intense and troubled.
That was a horrible relationship. And
oh my God. And
he divorced that wonderful woman. What's her name? That he was with for, like, 12 years or something. And she was that, like, beautiful French model. And
oh, yeah.
I think she was just, like, too normal for him.
Probably.
And eventually, when he did that movie with Amber, he had an affair behind her back.
Well, and I think that, you know, when there's like alcoholism and drug problems, it's very difficult for somebody to be in like a healthy relationship until they've like really, really got a handle on how difficult it is to like live with alcoholism and drug addiction. Yeah,
and then you find yourself going to other toxic people and making it worse by being with bad influences around you.
Right.
So sometimes if it's like, listen, I need to try to get better, a lot of times it's good to just like surround yourself either with like really positive people or not at all, and just surround yourself with professionals for a little while until you feel safe enough to be around people that you care about.
Right. I mean, sometimes that's totally necessary.
Yeah.
There's no shame in
that.
And I think Lautrec, you know, it's one of those things where all of his friends are partiers.
Yeah.
So I don't think like any of them would have physically been able or monetarily been able to help him in any way.
Sometimes the best thing to do is to like avoid. And for now, until you get a hold of things. Maybe not forever.
And nowadays, like, being sober is very popular.
Yeah, thank God. Like, yeah, the Gen Zers don't drink. I heard that a lot of bars are, like, trying to get more young people in because they're, like, not into it, which is super cool.
It's healthy.
Yeah,
good for you
and your organs, man.
Oh, my God. Their organs must look so much better than ours.
Way better. Way better.
But I mean, so imagine about how difficult it must have been to get sober when, like, that's the crew that you're with.
It's impossible.
And alcohol is everywhere. And then nowadays it's like, it's really hard too.
Yeah.
But at least, you know, things seem to be moving in the right direction. Though I will say one of my hairstylists was like, oh, yeah, no, I don't drink. I just do recreational cocaine. Like, oh, cool.
She's like, just well, wanted to sprinkle really that in there.
Okay, cool. She's like, well, yeah
we don't want you to do that either. Well, everything has fentanyl in it now, so yeah. Like, can't even have fun anymore.
No, but yeah, so that's our boy. Short king yeah. Short life, but big impact.
Huge impact.
Probably a big ding-a-ling too,
totally,
if I had to make a guess at it.
Oh my god, I liked that one. I love him.
Oh, I love him too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we are on Instagram.
Baroque.b.podcast.
You can visit our website, baroquebpodcast.com. We got
stickers.
And Chelsea's making some.
I'm making
awesome
prints,
posts.
just like Talisa Trek. So
just like Talisa Trek.
Yeah, those will be on there soon.
Yeah, he was making lithographs.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't make lithograph. That's too hard.
Lino cuts. Yeah.
I make lino cuts.
Steps and acid and
too much with the big stone and no, I'm not doing that.
I miss the smell of that gum stuff that border with.
I did like that. That was satisfying, the gum.
Yeah,
that was satisfying.
It's good stuff. You guys, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for being you. We love you so much. We couldn't do this without you. Thanks to our new patrons. Help us quit our day jobs on our Patreon.
Hashtag help us quit our day jobs.
Help us quit our day jobs. And if you want to be on the show, we do have some exciting guests coming up next month.
Yeah.
And go on Apple. Give us a 5-star review.
Only.
Leave a little comment on there.
We love the comments. We freak out over the comments.
Obsessed with the comments.
Thank you so much for all of your feedback. We listen to it. So yeah, if you have feedback, let us know.
We do. And if you can't do any of that,
just keep listening.
Keep listening. All right.
We love you. Bye.